Chapter 4. Sadler had known better than to expect an office of his own. The most he could hope for was a modest desk in some corner of accounts section, and that was exactly what he had got. This did not worry him. He was anxious to cause no trouble and to draw no unnecessary attention to himself, and in any case he spent relatively little time at his desk. All the final writing up of his reports took place in the privacy of his room, a tiny cubicle just large enough to ward off claustrophobia, which was one of 100 identical cells on the residential level. It had taken him several days to adapt to this completely artificial way of life. Here in the heart of the moon, time did not exist. The fierce temperature changes between the lunar day and night penetrated no more than a meter or two into the rock. The diurnal waves of heat and cold ebbed away before they reached this depth. Only man's clocks ticked off the seconds and minutes. Every 24 hours the corridor lights dimmed, and there was a pretense of night. Even then the observatory did not sleep. Whatever the hour, there would be somebody on duty. The astronomers, of course, had always been accustomed to working at peculiar hours, much to the annoyance of their wives, except in those quite common cases where the wives were astronomers, too. The rhythm of lunar life was no additional hardship to them. The ones who grumbled were the engineers, who had to maintain air, power, communications, and the observatory's other multitudinous services on a 24-hour basis. On the whole, thought Sadler, the administrative staff had the best of it. It did not matter much if accounts, entertainment, or stores closed down for 8 hours, as they did in every 24, so long as someone continued to run the surgery and the kitchen. Sadler had done his best not to get in anyone's hair, and believed that so far he had been quite successful. He had met all the senior staff except the director himself, who was absent on Earth, and knew by sight about half the people in the observatory. His plan had been to work conscientiously from section to section until he had seen everything the place had to offer. When he had done that, he would sit and think for a couple of days. There were some jobs which simply could not be hurried, whatever the urgency. Urgency. Yes, that was his main problem. Several times he had been told, not unkindly, that he had come to the observatory at a very awkward time. The mounting political tension had set the little community's nerves on edge, and tempers had been growing short. It was true that Nova Draconis had improved the situation somewhat, since no one could be bothered with such trivialities as politics while this phenomenon blazed in the skies. But they could not be bothered with cost accounting either, and Sadler could hardly blame them. He spent all the time he could spare from his investigation in the common room, where the staff relaxed when they were off duty. Here was the center of the observatory's social life, and it gave him an ideal opportunity of studying the men and women who had exiled themselves here for the good of science, or, alternatively, for the inflated salaries required to lure less dedicated individuals to the moon. Though Sadler was not addicted to gossip and was more interested in facts and figures than in people, he knew that he had to make the most of this opportunity. Indeed, his instructions had been very specific on this point, in a manner he considered unnecessarily cynical. But it could not be denied that human nature is always very much the same, among all classes and on all planets. Sadler had picked up some of his most useful information simply by standing within earshot of the bar. The common room had been designed with great skill and taste, and the constantly changing photo murals made it hard to believe that this spacious chamber was, in reality, deep in the crust of the moon. As a whim of the architect, there was an open fire in which a most realistic pile of logs burned forever without being consumed. This quite fascinated Sadler, who had never seen anything like it on Earth. He had now shown himself sufficiently good at games and general conversation to become an accepted member of the staff, and had even been entrusted with much of the local scandal. Apart from the fact that its members were of distinctly superior intelligence, the observatory was a microcosm of Earth itself. With the exception of murder, and that was probably only a matter of time, almost everything that happened in terrestrial society was going on somewhere here. Sadler was seldom surprised by anything, and certainly not by this. It was merely to be expected that all six of the girls in computing, after some weeks in a largely male community, now had reputations that could only be described as fragile. Nor was it remarkable that the chief engineer was not on speaking terms with the assistant chief executive, or that Professor X thought that Dr. Y was a certifiable lunatic, or that Mr. Z was reputed to cheat at hypercanasta. All these items were no direct concern of Sadler's, though he listened to them with great interest. They merely went to prove that the observatory was one big happy family. Sadler was wondering what humorist had stamped "not to be taken out of the lounge" across the shapely lady on the cover of last month's Tri-Planet News when Wheeler came storming into the room. "What is it now?" asked Sadler. "Discovered another nova? Or just looking for a shoulder to weep on?" He rather guessed that the latter was the case, and that his shoulder would have to do in the absence of anything more suitable. By this time he had grown to know Wheeler quite well. The young astronomer might be one of the most junior members of the staff, but he was also the most memorable. His sarcastic wit, lack of respect for higher authority, confidence in his own opinions, and general argumentativeness prevented him from hiding his light under a bushel. But Sadler had been told, even by those who did not like Wheeler, that he was brilliant and would go far. At the moment he had not used up the stock of goodwill created by his discovery of Nova Draconis, which in itself would be enough to ensure a reputation for the rest of his career. "I was looking for Wagtail. He's not in his office, and I want to lodge a complaint." "Secretary Wagnall," answered Sadler, putting as much reproof as he could into the correction, "went over to hydroponics half an hour ago. And if I may make a comment, isn't it somewhat unusual for you to be the source rather than the cause of a complaint?" Wheeler gave a large grin, which made him look incredibly and disarmingly boyish. "I'm afraid you're right. And I know this ought to go through the proper channels and all that sort of thing, but it's rather urgent. I've just had a couple of hours' work spoiled by some fool making an unauthorized landing." Sadler had to think quickly before he realized what Wheeler meant. Then he remembered that this part of the moon was a restricted area. No ships were supposed to fly over the northern hemisphere without first notifying the observatory. The blinding glare of ion rockets picked up by one of the great telescopes could ruin photographic exposures and play havoc with delicate instruments. "You don't suppose it was an emergency?" Sadler asked, struck by a sudden thought. "It's too bad about your work, but that ship may be in trouble." Wheeler had obviously not thought of this, and his rage instantly abated. He looked helplessly at Sadler, as if wondering what to do next. Sadler dropped his magazine and rose to his feet. "Shouldn't we go to communications?" he said. "They ought to know what's going on. Mind if I come along?" He was very particular about such points in etiquette, and never forgot that he was here very much on sufferance. Besides, it was always good policy to let people think they were doing you favors. Wheeler jumped at the suggestion and led the way to communications as if the whole idea had been his own. The signals office was a large, spotlessly tidy room at the highest level of the observatory, only a few meters below the lunar crust. Here was the automatic telephone exchange, which was the observatory's central nervous system, and here were the monitors and transmitters which kept this remote scientific outpost in touch with Earth. They were all presided over by the duty signals officer, who discouraged casual visitors with a large notice reading, "Positively and absolutely no admittance to unauthorized persons." "That doesn't mean us," said Wheeler, opening the door. He was promptly contradicted by a still larger notice. "This means you." Unabashed, he turned to the grinning Sadler and added, "All the places you're really not supposed to enter are kept locked anyway." Nevertheless, he did not push open the second door, but knocked and waited until a bored voice called, "Come in." The DSO, who was dissecting a spacesuit walkie-talkie set, seemed quite glad for the interruption. He promptly called Earth and asked traffic control to find out what a ship was doing in the Mare Imbrium without notifying the observatory. While they were waiting for the reply to come back, Sadler wandered round the racks of equipment. It was really surprising that it needed so much apparatus just to talk to people or to send pictures between Moon and Earth. Sadler, who knew how technicians loved explaining their work to anyone who showed real interest, asked a few questions and tried to absorb as many of the answers as he could. He was thankful that by this time no one bothered to wonder if he had any ulterior motives and was trying to find out if they could do their jobs for half the money. They had accepted him as an interested and inquisitive audience of one, for it was quite obvious that many of the questions he asked could have no financial significance. The reply from Earth came through on the auto printer soon after the DSO had finished his swift-conducted tour. It was a slightly baffling message. Flight non-scheduled, government business, no notification issued, further landings anticipated, inconvenience regretted. Wheeler looked at the words as if he could not believe his eyes. Until this moment, the skies of the observatory had been sacrosanct. No abbot facing the violation of his monastery could have been more indignant.
"They're going to keep it up," he spluttered. "What about our program?"
"Grow up, Con," said the signals officer indulgently. "Don't you listen to the news, or have you been too busy looking at your pet Nova? This message means just one thing. There's something secret going on out in the Mare. I'll give you one guess."
"I know," said Wheeler. "There's another of those hush-hush expeditions looking for heavy ores in the hope that the Federation won't find out. It's all so damn childish."
"What makes you think that's the explanation?" asked Sadler sharply.
"Well, that sort of thing's been going on for years. Any bar in town will give you all the latest gossip."
Sadler hadn't been into town yet, as the trip to Central City was called, but he could well believe this. Wheeler's explanation was highly plausible, particularly in view of the current situation.
"We'll just have to make the best of it, I suppose," said the DSO, attacking his walkie-talkie again. "Anyway, there's one consolation. All this is going on to the south of us, the other side of the sky from Draco, so it won't really interfere with your main work, will it?"
"I suppose not," Wheeler admitted grudgingly.
For a moment he seemed quite downcast. It was not, far from it, that he wanted anything to interfere with work, but he had been looking forward to a good fight, and to have it snatched out of his hands like this was a bitter disappointment. It needed no knowledge of the stars to see Nova Draconis now. Next to the waxing Earth, it was by far the brightest object in the sky. Even Venus, following the sun into the east, was pale compared to this arrogant newcomer. Already it had begun to cast a distinct shadow, and it was still growing in brilliance. Down on Earth, according to the reports coming over the radio, it was clearly visible even in the daytime. For a little while it had crowded politics off the front page, but now the pressure of events was making itself felt again. Men could not bear to think of eternity for long, and the Federation was only light minutes, not light centuries, away.